Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Friday, February 4th. Barnard, Bebout, Burns, Case, Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Dockstader, Driscoll, Amrick, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Anderson, Esquibel, Meyer,
excused.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Reverend Gilbert.
I come to the Senate, they open the door, but at my home I find I have to still open my own doors. I also want to mention the challenge I find in offering prayer. In our letter of invitation to be the chaplain sent to us by Judy Parks, she rightly writes that our prayers are to be non-sectarian and non-political. For me, that's a challenge. To be faithful to God, to whom I pray, and yet to have prayers in this place, not to be offensive to people who might hold beliefs different from my own. So for that challenge, I'm grateful. I appreciate your courtesies and your challenge to be your chaplain. I also appreciate the continuation of the tradition to have prayer before the opening sessions each day. Thank you, Mr. President. May we pray. In the Hebrew story of creation, we are reminded that you, O God of all creation, on the sixth day, looked back upon everything that you had made, and indeed, it was very good. So as we come to the end of another week, may we also have the privilege of looking back upon everything that we have done and affirm that it was very good. Empowering God, truly deep down inside, we want to be our best and we want to do our best. And so we keep our lives open to your presence and power so that we can be all that we can be. The creation story also tells us that on the seventh day you rested. Creator God, help us in this weekend to find that quiet place and the timely space where we might rest, be recreated, renewed, and refreshed so we are adequate to the challenges and opportunities that surely will await us in the approaching week. And while we await renewal in our personal lives, we pray for renewal within the land of Egypt, that they may find a government that is of the people, by the people, and for the people. God, we are grateful for your sufficient grace, your unfailing guidance, and your empowering presence. Keep us in your care and use us in your service. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading clerk, please read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the Journal of February the 3rd, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? Being none, the report is adopted. Our doctor for the day is Fred Baldwin, physician's assistant from Kemmerer, and also with him as a nurse for the day, Perry Davidson, CRNA from the South Lincoln Medical Center from Kemmerer. Senator Cooper, did you have a special comment in this regard?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, I'd like to introduce, this is Representative Kathy Davidson's family here and friend, so I'd like to introduce them. Right here is Perry Baldwin, who is the daughter of Representative Kathy Davidson, the nurse of the day, and this is her son-in-law, Fred Baldwin, the doctor of the day. And then this is her granddaughter, Michaela, who's here, and a friend, Jaden, who is here. And this is a grandson, Christopher.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank Welcome, you. President.
All right.
And we would just say thank you for your service. Not only to the Senate today, but thank you for your service to Wyoming. On this day in Wyoming history, in 1932, the Washakie Hotel was destroyed by fire in Thermopolis. And also on this day in history in the United States, in 1789, George Washington was unanimously elected as the first president of the United States by the United States Electoral College, and as most of us know, John Adams was his vice president. Senator Driscoll, did you have something for us?
Mr. Chairman, privilege the floor.
You may.
I'd like to recognize the State 4-H leadership team, our future leaders, Landon Doyle from Orland, Rebel Rakitas from Star Valley, Paula Arendri from Gillette, Maddie Morgan from Gillette, Shaylee Little from Sheridan, Jerry Byerman from Pinedale, Robin Schramber from Pinedale, the advisors Warren Crawford from Laramie, Janet Byerman, and Lindsay Manese as guests. Please welcome them.
Please welcome them. Welcome to the Senate. Yes, Senator Von Platern.
I may have privilege.
You may.
The floor. Mr. President, keeping with your theme of this day in history in Wyoming, I can tell you that several years ago, many years ago, and tomorrow in Wyoming, many years ago, one of a certain person was born who is later to grow up to be our majority floor leader. So would the Senate please wish a happy birthday to Senator Tony Ross.
And, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, if you'd like to come forward just briefly, I have a small gift for you. Having been in your shoes, I know what a job it is to keep this floor in order at times. So as Super Bowl Sunday approaches, I'm going to give you this flag to throw in the event that we have any disorderly conduct. And my suggestion is that you assess a 10-word penalty. And also, Saxon, would you come over to this mic, please? Well, Saxon, this brings to the end of your 2-week service here, and I'd like to say what a pleasure it's been to have a former Douglas Bearcat, because I, too, am a red, white, and blue Bearcat like you. But anyway, this is a small token of our appreciation, our recognition. It's a resolution from the Wyoming State Senate, saying that you have served as a page for the Senate. During the time that you've served, your service as a page has been exceptional, fully appreciated by all of us, and that this resolution has the supports of all the members of this legislature who have signed their name here too, and you'll find the signatures of all. So, Saxon, you have served the Senate of Wyoming with a good deal of dignity and respect. The dedication will serve you well, I think, in your future. And so, with great appreciation, we recognize you for this outstanding dedication and support to the Wyoming Senate on this fourth day of January 2001. Again, thank you. We'll expect report cards weekly. I understand that you have your eye on the University of Wyoming, and next year when we come visit, we'd hope that you'd be there.
All right.
Thank you so much.
I don't really have a speech prepared, I guess. I guess thanks for the experience. It was a great couple weeks, and I made sure to speak into my mic, so I'm learning something. So thanks a lot, though. It was a great couple of weeks. Thank you.
You know, Saxon, one of the things we quite often ask our pages to do is to pick your spot out there and set your goals. So, messages from the House.
February the 3rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 222, Committee of the Whole, indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 197, Nuisance Abatement. Ayes 25, noes 35. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. House Bill 216, Misdemeanors, Maximum Fine. Ayes 14, noes 43, excused 1, absent 1. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 92, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 92, Impersonation Through Electronic Means, an Act Relating to Crimes and Offenses, sponsored by Representative Lubnow. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2.
House Bill 92 has been assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 147, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 147, Excise Tax Vendor Compensation, and Act Relating to Taxation and Revenue, sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 54, noes 6.
House Bill 147 has been assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 153, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 153, Agricultural Gas Tax Refund Program, an Act Relating to Fuel Tax, sponsored by Representative Semlich. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 153 has been assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 155, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 155, Student Assessment Amendments, and Act Relating to Student Assessment, sponsored by Representative Lubnow. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1.
House Bill 155 has been assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 178, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 178, Vault, Crypts, and Mausoleums, Perpetual Trust Funds, an Act Relating to Cemeteries and Burials, sponsored by Representative Kraft. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 53, no 6, excused 1.
House Bill 178 has been assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 129, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 129, Nuclear Energy Production Study and Act Relating to Nuclear Energy, sponsored by Representative Harshman. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 56, 3, noes 3, excused 1.
House Bill 129 has been referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 103, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 103, WICHE Repayment Program, an act relating to the Western Regional Higher Education Compact, sponsored by Representative McKim. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 103 has been assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. Reports from standing committees.
February the 3rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 2, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, and Emmerich. No, Senator Hines and Perkins. Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 3rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 138, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, and Hines. No, Senators Perkins. Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 3rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 143, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins. No, Senator Case. Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 4th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 152, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 4th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 74, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Geis, and Hicks. No, Senator Emmerich, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 4th, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 61, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, yesterday I was off the floor, and for that I apologize, when you read in House Bill 37, which is State Archive Storage Study, sponsored by the Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources Committee. That bill has an appropriation, and I ask that you re-refer it to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Request is that House Bill
37
be re-referred to Committee Number 2. Seeing no objection, that is so ordered. Thank you, Senator Burns. Now I think we're ready for second reading. Senate File 29, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 29, Developmental Disability Services, sponsored by the Developmental Intellectual Programs Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 29 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 52, second reading, Senate File 52, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 52, Teacher Tenure, sponsored by Senator Cole.
Senate File 52, having been read, Senator Cole.
I believe there's an amendment.
Go ahead, Senator Cole. Yes. There is an amendment on it. It is a co-amendment, second reading amendment number one, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time, please.
Senate File 52, second reading amendment number one to substitute bill number one, page 3, line 10.
Now, Senator Coe, would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 52. What this does, Mr. President, we had definitions in the bill, and one of them was termination, and this goes into the other definitions where we have the word termination and takes that out to make it clear. It takes it out on page 3 under dismissal. It takes it out on page 4, paragraph 9, under the definition for suspension without pay. So all this really does, Mr. President, is clean up the word termination, puts it back where it belongs.
Anyone like to speak to this amendment? Ask questions? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1, Senate File 52. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. There are no other amendments. Senate File 52. Senator Nicholas.
If I could we have the I'd move to have Senate File 52, the final read on second, laid back till Monday.
That has been presented in the form of a motion, the motion being that Senate File 52 be laid back until second reading on Monday. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That motion does carry. Senate File 52 has been laid back. Second reading on Monday. Senate File 103, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 103, Gillette Madison Water Project Financing, sponsored by Senator Hines.
There are no amendments, and Senate File 103, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 125, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 125, Healthcare Facilities Crisis Management, sponsored by Senator Scott.
There are no amendments. Senator Scott, would you like to speak to this?
Mr. President, I would like to request that Senate File 125 be laid back until second reading on Monday. I'm aware of at least two amendments in active preparation, and we're doing some other things trying to deal with the situation. And I think we'd be much better off if we could lay it back and deal with amendments on second reading on Monday.
Request is that Senate File 125 be laid back until second reading. Are there any objections? Seeing none, Senate File 125 has been laid back until second reading on Monday. Senate File 144, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 144, State-Funded Construction Projects Preference Provisions, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
There are no amendments. Senate File 144, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list for third reading today?
Mr. President, third reading consent list for today is as follows. Senate File 118, Career and Technical Training Grants. Senate File 131, Military Department Federally Funded Positions. Senate File 135, University of Wyoming, Federal Mineral Royalties. Senate File 147, Service of Process Fees. And Senate Joint Resolution 7, Bark Beetle Mitigation.
Would any member wish to have any of these removed from the consent list? Seeing none, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 118, Senate File 131, Senate File 135, Senate File 147, Senate Joint Resolution 7. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
B. Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platen. President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 118. Are there any changes? Nicholas, aye to no. Jennings, aye to no.
Perkins, aye to no.
Dockstader, aye to no. Burns, aye to no.
Driscoll, aye to no.
Case, aye to no.
Coe,
aye to no.
Bebout,
aye to no. Peterson, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no. Amrick, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 118. 18 ayes, 12 noes. Senate File 131. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 131, 30 ayes. Senate File 135, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 135, 30 ayes. Senate File 147, are there any changes? Jennings, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 147, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate Joint Resolution 7, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate Joint Resolution 7, 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 118, Senate File 131, Senate File 135, Senate File 147, Senate Joint Resolution 7 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 113, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 113, Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revisions, an act relating to professional surveyors and engineers, sponsored by Senator Johnson. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment, and that is the Johnson Amendment. I'd ask the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 113, third reading amendment number 1, page 46, after line 18.
Senator Johnson, would you like to move and speak to that amendment at this time, please?
Yes, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move first reading amendment, third reading amendment number one to Senate File 113. The senators will remember I had this amendment yesterday on second reading, and there were some questions on it, and I ask that you vote no on it. And if those who had questions were satisfied that this was a good amendment, that I would bring it back today. And I brought it back today, and you'll notice that my co-sponsor is the distinguished senator from Natrona County. Again, what the second reading does is it tightens up on state employees, so you don't need engineers just to check on routine application completedness, things like that. But if they're doing engineering duties and if the their work goes outside, then they have to be professional engineers. So I would ask that you please vote aye on this amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, further, the concern I had yesterday was that the amendment was going to not be broad enough to cover all the things that the state engineers people did. And he came up and I talked to him, and he said that he could live with it just fine, that the other things that they did in that there were really engineering, they wanted real engineers for. So he was perfectly all right with the amendment that was offered, and so that's why we've come back with it this time.
Other comments, questions? Seeing none, the question before us is regarding the third reading amendment number one, Senate File 113. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Senate File 113, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer, Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing?
Nicholas, aye to no.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Senate File 113, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 113 has passed the Senate. Senate File 132, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 132, strangulation of a household member, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Senator Hastert, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Hastert, did you want to speak to this bill?
Mr. President, thank you. I'm going to request that it be laid back. There are some issues that another member and I are working out on some details, and so in order to facilitate that or accommodate that time, I'm requesting that that bill be laid back till Monday.
The request is that Senate File 132 be laid back until third reading on Monday. Seeing no objection, it's so ordered. Senate Joint Resolution 1, third reading of the Senate Joint Resolution 1.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, right to hunt, fish, and trap, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution by recognizing and preserving the heritage of Wyoming citizens' opportunity to harvest wild birds, fish, and game, sponsored by Senator Hicks. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are some amendments. The first amendment is the Hicks Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, Third Reading Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 3.
Senator Hicks, would you like to move that amendment and speak to it at this time?
Yes, Mr. President. I would like to move that amendment, but first I would like to withdraw Third Reading Amendment Number 1.
I don't even have it.
Third Reading Amendment Number 1, Senate Joint 1, has been withdrawn. It would require no motion in order to do that.
Okay. Now, if I could speak to resolution number 2 for
Senate. All right, then, if your desire is to address the second amendment, I'd ask that the reading clerk.
I did read it.
Okay, you read that one in?
Yes.
The second reading
yes.
number, two, or third reading amendment number 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's been read in, so then you could go ahead and move and speak to that amendment.
Mr. President, I would like to move that amendment and speak to the substance of the amendment. If you will track this amendment, does one thing. It adds conforming language all the way through, and what it does is it changes the word right to hunt, fish, or trap to the opportunity to hunt, fish, or trap consistently all the way through the bill. Would ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment.
Comments or questions in regard to this amendment? All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? That amendment is passed. We're now back on the bill.
Mr. President, if I may, back on the bill, distinguished members of the Senate, you have before you today a proposition. And unlike a lot of the votes that you're going to cast this year, this one poses a little bit of a different question. The question before you today is whether you, which is you and me, the representatives of the people of the state of Wyoming on occasion believe that through their own conduct, that they are capable of self-determination. Because what we're doing here, if we're voting for an opportunity for the people of Wyoming to either vote for a constitutional amendment or not. And that's what we're doing here. With that, I would humbly ask you to let the people of the state of Wyoming have an opportunity to decide on this particular amendment. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments in regard to Senate Joint Resolution 1? Question being called. Senate Joint Resolution 1, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall this Senate Joint Resolution pass? The Chief Clerk will call a roll. I would remind you that this requires a two-thirds majority in order to pass. Chief Clerk will call a roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, having received the affirmative vote of the two-thirds majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Joint Resolution Number 1 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for considerations of bills on general file.
Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. That motion has carried. Senator Burns.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill before us is Senate File 139. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 139, Health Care Pilot Project Amendments, an act relating to Healthy Frontiers and Health Care Reform Demonstration Project, sponsored by Senator Scott. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladren. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that Senate File 139 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment from the Committee Number 10. I ask it be read in at this time.
Reading clerk will read the standing committee amendment.
Senate File 139, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Standing Committee Amendment, this is the bill to amend the health care pilot project, the Healthy Frontiers. The Standing Committee Amendment does two things. First, there was language used. We put in a provision so that if somebody got in the program and immediately left, we could take their personal health account balances away and just return them to the program. The language used in the bills introduced related to forfeits and forfeiture. And just to make sure nobody thought that ought to go to the Common School Fund, we changed the language to surrender. So that's the one thing it does. The basic provision is important because we got to thinking, as we developed the benefit design, could somebody really game the system on us? And yes, they can if we don't put the provision in. This is just trying to get the language right. And then on page 4, we've got a provision. One of the things that we identified during the benefit design is that we'll be dealing with people who are used to the Medicaid program, used to being uninsured, and who go to the emergency room just routinely because it doesn't cost them anything. And this is a very new setup. It's expensive to go to the emergency room. You're dealing with a personal health account they've probably not encountered before. It's very important that they get some education on how it works. And what the standing committee did was go in there where they're educating new enrollees on the mechanics of receiving and added the word and procedure in so that you're trying to teach people how this new system they've got enrolled works. I suppose somewhat similar to insurance agent will do for you with a new health insurance policy, but it needs to be more extensive with this particular population, and that's what that's about. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Scott, would you move the Standing Committee
okay.
Amendment, please?
Oh, I thought I had. Mr. Chairman, I'll move the Standing Committee Amendment.
Standing Committee Amendment's been read and moved. No discussion. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 1, to Senate File 139, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment passes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I'd like to explain the bill before we go to the amendment from committee number two. Mr. Chairman, this is, as I said, the amendments to the health care pilot project that we passed last time. Let me just very briefly review the basics of that, and there is a fact sheet that I believe by now has been passed out on this. What we're trying to do is find a way to deal with a low-income, uninsured population in a way that, A, provides good health, quality health care for them, and B, is cost-effective. And we employ four major techniques to do that. We've got an enhanced prevention program. Most insurances have a prevention program. We've added some considerable things, including some primary care visits, including some of the basic maintenance medications for things like high blood pressure. We have a thing that looks like a health savings account. We call it a personal health account. We don't have to worry about the formalities of a health savings account as the IRS regulations have them because this is a low-income population, so we don't need to worry about that. But it's basically what it is. And that enables us to do significant co-payments with this population, which we think will be a considerable help in giving them incentive to control the costs that they incur. And that's one of the themes of this, is using incentives to control your costs. And then we have a prevention team, and all these are in the bill last time, for the people who are either in the very high cost realm or might well get there. We think that it's a prevention team, advanced nurse practitioner and a pharmacist. We think that will, with these potentially high-cost people, considerably reduce their need for health care. And we're putting all this together. It involves spending more money up front on everybody. It will, we think, reduce the cost for everybody because of the reduced emergency room use compared with what goes on in Medicaid. But principally, by reducing the cost for the very high expenditure illnesses and problems, because we think we can prevent a lot of them. And the modeling looks very good on it. Computer modeling says we can save up to 35%. There's no substitute for trying it with real people, and that's what this bill is all about. There are some changes, as I told the Senate last year. Doing one of these new things, you're going to get some things wrong the first time, and we've already learned a few of those things. And also, this bill was passed last year about 3 weeks before the national reform at a time when we thought the national reform might well not pass. And we need to make a few changes in respect to that. Let me review them just very briefly. Page four, I spoke about the provision where we know we're going to have to spend some extra time and effort educating people on how the new system. That's at the top of page four. Bottom page four, ask the governor in consultation with your benefit design committee to start thinking about how we might adapt this into the private employer-based insurance market for the people that are eligible. It's basically the provision says go look at the issue, but don't implement anything until you've come back to the legislature. And it says procedures under review and approval under procedures the legislature may prescribe. That means you got to pass a bill, and it's a practical matter. So we're taking a first look at that. On page 5 in the section on priorities, we did several things. Right now, the first priority is individuals completed a vocational readiness work preparation program. Department of Workforce Services other Wyoming state agency or Wyoming Community College. We add to that any private organization providing similar training. We've discovered several of these in the state. I won't use their names, but they look like they're doing, Mr. Chairman, very close the same thing, and we ought to put them in the same priority, and it's a good place to go recruiting enrollees. And then in the next section, we had a priority for those whose income was less than or equal to 150% of federal poverty. That was because one of the versions of the national reform had that provision in. What actually passed in Washington turns out to really have 138%. So we changed that from 150 to 138%. So we're giving a priority to the population that may become eligible under the expansion in Medicaid that program mandates. Then we do allow a very small ability to have one of the people go to work with somebody in private insurance and cut a deal with a private employer. That's the next section. Then the section that we mentioned earlier on page 6, where somebody leaves immediately, and under those circumstances, we want the balance in the personal health account back. We don't want people gaming us. And we moved the date up on page 6, line 18, from October 1st to September 1st, 2011, where we could go to the expanded amount. That's to try to give maximum time with the expanded population to see if it will work on a statistically reliable way so that we have the information in 2013 when we may have to make a decision on how do we deal with the Medicaid expansion, presuming the national health reform survives. And as we discussed the other day, we potentially have a very nasty decision in dealing with that expansion. Either you go along and raise taxes to pay for it, or you say no and raise taxes to pay for what the feds will no longer pay for in Medicaid. This is a potential third option, and if we're going to need to make that decision in 2013, we need as much information as we can. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick run-through of the bill. Say just a few things. I think mostly we ought to discuss the appropriation in the context of the Committee 2 amendment. Just an outline. One of the major things, looking at page 9, subsection A in the appropriation, one of the way we had it set when we passed the bill last time was we were looking to purchase reinsurance. We learned some things that we didn't know about reinsurance. Turns out, if you're going to use reinsurance, you've got to be able to pay the bill up front and then collect from the reinsurer. And if you have a major case, that bill could be very large. So you have to have some capital. Also, until you have a little experience, the reinsurers won't give you a reasonable quote. Or it may well be, we never were able to get a really firm quote from any of them. They are scared of government programs that they will have what's called adverse selection and just get the sick people in. And until you can prove to them with actual experience that that won't happen, they're not real interested and they won't be reasonable. So you need to have some capital. That's what the appropriation in subsection A is. One-time shot, so that you have some capital to meet those needs. Subsection B is the basic expansion appropriation, and then subsection C is the evaluation appropriation. Mr. Chairman, I think at this point it would be appropriate to read in the Standing Committee amendment from the Appropriations Committee.
The reading clerk will read in Standing Committee Amendment Number 2.
Senate File 139, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 9, line 8.
You've heard the reading of the Standing Committee Amendment. What's your pleasure? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House or Senate File 139. Ladies and gentlemen, before I go and explain what the amendment does, It's probably appropriate to sort of give you a little bit about how I've articulated my own philosophy with respect to this bill. You may find it helpful or not, but if you think if you're a company out there and you have a research and development division, and the issue is you know that to either undertake new risks or to grow your company, you're going to have to take some research and development, and you have your R&D department out trying new things. In this instance, what we all know is we have a huge Medicaid obligation of about $1 billion every biennium. It's very in excess of that. It's of total health department. Our Medicaid is less than that, but it's a significant obligation. And we have to find out ways to control our costs in the future. So if you're sitting there in your R&D department, you've got your scientists over there trying to come up with solutions, how do you detect which ones you want to fund and which one aren't? Which one are the mad scientists that have great ideas, but you can't see it, and which ones are the just looking for some money? At the same time, you don't want, if you've got an R&D department, you know you have to control your costs. You simply can't run your scientists loose, because if you do, you'll go broke. So what do you do? Well, part of that is how do you decide which projects to fund? Well, in this instance, we know we have a problem. The Labor Department and our colleague from Natrona County has been working hard on trying to find a solution that will work in the future. And what we know is that he's enlisted the support of the Department of Health, the executive branch, and his colleagues on the Labor Committee. And it seems like this is a project worth seeing, a R&D project worth seeing if it'll work. Having said that, the question is, what are the limits? What are the boundaries if we set the project? How much are we prepared to put at risk? In this instance, the proponent comes back and says, let's increase this to make a more statistically, a larger group to make it more statistically balanced so we can get information. We started out saying we'll fund 500 people in this program, and the proponent says, you know, what we really need are 3,000 people in this program to make sure that we have a statistical analysis. Frankly, our position was, you know, we need to put some sideboards on this. We told you 500. How much will it take you to finish that group up? And that was the $2.279 million that you see inside the amendment, which is what the Appropriations Committee said. We heard the testimony that, hey, statistically, we ought to have a larger group, and we heard the testimony that with the new federal Medicaid law, we have a group of people that if we don't have some plan for that, and these are the people above those that are presently insured under Medicaid and will become insured under the new plan if it becomes law, we need to be prepared for that. We heard that testimony. We simply said, and I'm not sure whether we found it convincing. I think I would find it convincing that, frankly, you need a larger group to have a statistical analysis. That I agree with. Having said that, the committee would like to see, can you make it work with 500 first before we go on? So that was the recommendation. That's point one. Point two is that there was to be some studying of it. At the bottom, they wanted $300,000 of the study. We said, well, wait a minute, what about $100,000? Do that and then come back and we'll see you next year. And so we recommended $100,000 on the study. The $1.5 million on the top, let me talk about that. That's more complicated. It has some other ramifications. The idea generally, as I understood the plan, was in a real layman's term, and what we were going to do is have a high deductible insurance policy with a health savings account. So we go out to these families and say, look, here, we're going to fund your health savings account. You don't have to put any money in it. We're going to fund that, and we're going to teach you how to manage your own health savings account. And because you have something in your health savings account, you won't need to go into your insurance policy if you manage it well. So we'll have a high deductible policy. Fair enough. Well, if you're going to have a high deductible policy and you're going to allow unlimited lifetime claims or $500,000 claims, you look at your premiums and then you decide, is there enough reserves to cover all the claims? Well, obviously, if everybody in the claim or in the group come in and make $4 million claims, you're broke. So what typically happens in a typical insurance company policy is the company will go out and purchase reinsurance on a reinsurance market. They buy insurance for those high claims so that if they have these extraordinary high claims, they've insured against them. Well, we have now a brand new group. We don't know the history of this group, and the reinsurance firms won't provide the reinsurance. Actually, they will, but the premium will be exactly what you offer to pay them. If you want $1.5 million of reinsurance, that's what your premium is going to come up. So the proponents of the plan said, well, let's do it this way. Let's go ahead and become our own reinsurance pool. Well, that gets into an interesting question because you ask yourself, what is the reinsurance for? Are we simply adding $1.5 million of funding to the reserves that can be utilized for this 500 group? Well, if you're doing that, you might as well say this: the cost of this is 500 divided by 1,500, and that's your cost. And if you're going to do that, we can probably say right now today this will never work. It's too expensive. The other is to say, well, let's sort of imagine that we were a reinsurance and that money is only available for reinsurance claims just in case there is an unexpected loss. Well, then if you're going to do that as a reinsurance firm, you'd say, well, what is our potential liability? What on the amount of benefits that you can get? Is it the cap $50,000, $150,000, or $200,000? And our first position was, is okay, what is a reasonable cap that you probably won't have to go into this reinsurance fund? And the discussion was, well, maybe $150,000 per person. That's all you can get under this insurance plan. So you can get a knee replaced, but you're not going to get a lung bypass or a lung transplant. Probably couldn't get a blood transplant either. But so what we had asked is say, why don't you come back and show us that your plan won't be able to go above claims of 150. And what they asked is this. They said, let the plan people devise the plan. We'll make sure that we treat the $1.5 million a reinsurance pool, and we won't go in there. I think that deserves discussion and maybe second, third reading amendment, and that is, are we going to say in this R&D research plan that there is a maximum amount that you can receive by statute, or are we going to leave the group to do it? And the issue is what does the $1.5 million represent? It is our understanding, our recommendation, that the $1.5 million be there not to increase the reserves, rather to be available only as a reinsurance pool set of dollars to avoid high risk. And the issue then is that we need to talk about as we go through is, well, if we do this, then should we require a cap placed on the maximum amount of benefits that any beneficiary can receive, or how do we protect that reinsurance? Because now we are a reinsurance pool to this plan. Having said that, that's a discussion that can go forward. I would ask for your support of this amendment. It does the three things. It says we're going to fund a 500-person plan. We understand it's more expensive than you originally thought, so here's $2.2 million. You only get $100,000 for the cost of doing the analysis of whether the project is working. And there's $1.5 million available as a reinsurance, which is yet to be in my mind, acutely defined.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion on the amendment? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question with regards to the 1.5 as to how we reach that. You know, in my own mind, I have a real question about whether or not the state should be involved in being a reinsurer, and whether or not there's discussion in the committee as to that concept in and of itself. And if the decision is that perhaps we should be in the reinsurance business, then it would seem to me that there will need to be some amendments in order to justify or to make certain that we don't go over the 1.5.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of points on that, speaking on and for the amendment. The problem that you get into is that in the normal operating appropriation, which is the subsection B appropriation, you cover what your normal expectation is, but you're dealing with, in insurance terms, quite small numbers when you're at 500, or, frankly, if you're at 3,000. And you have the risk that, just bad luck of the draw, that you'll have two or three people that you'll enroll, and the next thing that'll happen is they'll have a massive heart attack and run up a great big bill. That's a risk that you can't get away with. The risk is there whether it's one person or 500 or 3,000. So you need to have some ability where your expectation may be the average, but you're outside the average because you had some just plain bad luck. And what this does, if you look at the language in the Standing Committee Amendment carefully, it's in excess of the amounts available in the appropriation subsection B. Okay, so you're over the operating appropriation for claims in excess of $50,000 per person. So it's only for great big claims, and it's only above the allowance we've got for those that's contained in the regular appropriation as you put that cost together. I think that covers it. As far as the question of amendments to keep you from going over it, I don't think that's necessary because in the bill we passed last year that this is amendments to, there is a requirement that they live within the appropriation. And that forces them to what it'll, as a practical matter, do is force your benefit design committee and the committee, that the group that's managing this, which is the board of the Wyoming Uninsurable Pool, who we drafted into duty to manage this new one, to say we've got to put a limit on the benefit level that we will insure up to in order to make sure we stay within that appropriation. They'll have to consult their actuaries a bit and the people with insurance experience, which you have on that board, and say what's our appetite for risk, how far can we go. My guess is it's going to be, right now it's 50,000 because of the low appropriation we have. We're going to be able to, with this, increase it to somewhere between 150 and 250,000. That's a decision that I think would not be wise to make here on this floor. You want to make that consulting with some professionals who can run some numbers and see what they think, and consult some actuaries who've got some practical experience in insurance. But that's the practical effect of doing it the way we're doing. With regard to the question of should we be in the reinsurance business at all, I don't think we have. We're not getting into it generally. We're dealing with this one particular program, and I don't think we have any choice. The way we did it with the uninsurable pool when we first put that in, and the way we do it with the Medicaid program, is in the Medicaid program there's an unlimited draw at the general fund. And with the Wyoming Uninsurable Pool, we had some close calls, but they had an ongoing revenue stream that was diverted, plus the ability to assess insurance companies. neither of which are appropriate for this program. So I think the Standing Committee amendment, I think it's workable. It does, and I want to make this very clear, it does violate a provision of the National Reform by forcing us to put a limitation on it. It is my belief that as a legal matter, this is a support program for the necessary support of the poor in Wyoming, state of Wyoming welfare program, and that's our business and not the federal government. And we're all right on that score. It's also my belief we're small enough they aren't going to bother us as a practical matter. So those are the protections. It's not as large a reinsurance. It will cause a lower limit than I would like, but it's not at all unreasonable, and I would urge the Senate to adopt it.
Additional discussion? Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I wanted to discuss that last notion so we're all have an understanding of what's happening here. A reinsurer would come in and provide insurance that in the event that there are claims above the funds that are available in the reserve account that are established by collection of premiums. So if you collect premiums of $2 million, the best guess of everybody is all the claims will be under $2 million. The reinsurance says, okay, give me $100,000 of insurance, and if you go over that, I'll take that risk. And the reinsurer says, now, having taken that risk, let me see your plan, because I want to make sure your plan is designed so that there's a very small probability of you ever going into that reserve account. And he's betting that you'll never go into the reserve account and hoping that he'll keep his $100,000 and never have to give you a penny back. What the state has been doing is actually appropriating a $1.5 million sum. And the question is what does that sum represent? While the bill does not articulate it in this as well as we're talking now, it is our intent as part of this amendment to say that isn't a reinsurance money. And it's only available if the plan properly designed to keep the sums below the funds available, something unusual happens. For example, if suppose they put caps on $150,000 and it turns out they thought there were maybe 20 people would hit that cap, and they made a mistake. 30 people hit the cap, and now they go over. The question is, then, who is representing the reinsurance entity? When you have the reinsurance pool, you've got somebody over there. He's got your $100,000 in his pocket, and he's trying to make sure he never has to spend that $100,000. And he's looking to critically examine the setup of the fund. Heretofore, our limit was the amount of funds available. We say if you don't have any funds, then the last person to come in doesn't get his claims paid. Them's the breaks. What they're asking us now to do is say, well, what we would like to do is raise that claim up to say 100, or the limit per person up to say $150,000, $200,000, $250,000, and we would like to have some buffer so that if we've made a mistake, then and there are more claims than anticipated, they can go into this amount. The difficulty that you have in principle is that if we don't set limits here, then the people that are designing the plan are also the only people you have to defend your reinsurance fund. So there is a level of trust here that you give to the same people designing the plan the ability to essentially have $1.5 million swag. If you miss it, you got the $1.5 million. But what our instruction was to them is to say, okay, fair enough, we'll allow that reserve fund to be the swag, if you will, the reinsurance fund, But you tell us, and we want you to design this plan where you do not have to go in that money unless there's something or use that money. And ultimately, we've not heard a report back from them because they don't have that information. We're moving along, and it remains of concern, but in any event, the R&D project seems like there ought to be some support for it. It seems like there is an appropriate occasion for reinsurance. We might want to talk about who's going to be the, are we going to assign somebody to be the trust protector, if you will, and the trust is this $1.5 million, and the trust protector makes sure that nobody goes into it and that we make a good gamble.
Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like this health care pilot, Mr. Chairman, but I am concerned about some of these reinsurance issues that we've been discussing, and in particular what I'm thinking is when we look at the Affordable Care Act and we consider that, while they might not consider us big enough to worry about, Mr. Chairman, the concern is that one of the stipulations of that act is that there is no lifetime limit and no annual limit on the insurance that can be paid out for a particular individual. So that's obviously a change. And I'm not so much worried about just us setting this cap and trying to skate under the radar a little bit, but if there is a situation where an individual accrues $1 million worth of annual requirements for their medical bills, what's going to happen? It seems to me that they would have very strong standing to sue the state and to get us to pay for that. Now, if we have a situation where there are two or three of those individuals, or over a period of years we have a few of those individuals, it seems that if the Affordable Care Act ends up standing, and you know, we obviously see that there's some court cases against it, but we have to kind of plan for the contingency that that's going to be alive in a few years, what is the potential financial impact if we don't have reinsurance? Obviously, the way that the insurance companies are operating is what we've been hearing about, that they have the reinsurers, and they're going to use their actuarials to determine how much reinsurance they need based on good statistical significance and data. We're not going to have that statistical significance, which I recognize is one of the keys why we wanted to expand the pool, but that's another affordability factor. So we find ourselves, Mr. Chairman, in a very difficult situation, I think, where we could end up with a lot of state liability that's unanticipated because we don't have a strong, statistically significant pool for this experiment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give my response, which I don't know is correct, and turn it over to our colleague from Natrona to see if it is. But here's what happens, I think. As a general matter, we're trying to focus on people that are in that that have jobs and maybe not be Medicaid eligible because they have jobs and things like that. My guess is what happens is, unfortunately, if one of the people in our plan that's presently not Medicaid eligible blows through your $150,000 cap, he's probably not going to have a job. He's going to be, the next day he'll be on Medicaid and he'll go over to Medicaid for services. That's what I'm assuming. And ultimately then you have to say, somehow we have to keep track of those people because we have to put them into our analysis to find out if this plan in fact works. But we're trying to keep them healthy so they don't do that. And the plan is, can we teach these people to manage their health savings accounts, to stay healthy, to reduce their needs, to get them into preventive medicine. Frankly, I've always been skeptical that you can take people that have never managed their checkbooks, that manage a savings account out there, but we need to find out. One is, can we do that? And two, what does it take to say, we're going to give you this amount of money to manage your health to avoid having to go into your insurance? And that's the R&D project in a nutshell, teaching people to manage their care affordably and thereby prevent them from having to go get more expensive care because they're getting checkups, they're doing the things, preventive care that they ordinarily would not have acquired if the or had any incentive to do because they had no insurance and no way to pay for these checkups. So if it works, it's worth at least finding out, but I believe the answer is they hit the cap, they go on to Medicaid.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, that answer is accurate for probably the vast majority of the people that would be involved here. There will be some who would be categorically, at the present time, ineligible for Medicaid. And their situation basically would be, say the cap was at 200,000, which is possible. And they get themselves into a $1 million problem, which is highly unlikely, but possible. Right now, if that happened to them, they don't have any insurance that couldn't pay anything. The hospitals would get stuck, and it'd be cost-shifted to all the rest of them. With this plan, the first 200,000 would be paid, and then they'd be broke, and they'd be cost-shifted to all the rest of them. Perfect, exactly the way it was going to. So you're 200,000 better off if that's what the limit is. I don't think you have any significant risk of a suit. The attorneys could tell you better than I can, but let me just say it's difficult for an individual to sue the state of Wyoming, and that's what you're doing. You're saying we didn't give you a big enough welfare benefit, and I don't think you'd get anywhere. I think the more likely risk is that the feds would try to put a stop to us, and I don't think that would happen.
Any additional comment on second reading? I'm sorry, Standing Committee Amendment number 2. Any additional comment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 139, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 2 has passed. We have a Committee of the Whole Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole Amendment?
Senate File 139, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, page 10, line 1.
You've heard the reading of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. Senator Scott.
Chairman, I move adoption of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. Mr. Chairman, this is designed to give people a choice as to how fast we're going to go with this project. The way, frankly, my expectation when we passed the bill last year was that we would come back to you for enough funding to go to the full 500 for a year and give a more thorough test. In fact, did we get the bugs out? How do people really behave? It's not enough to statistically tell, are you saving money with any reliability, but it's enough to tell, can you make a health savings account work with this low-income population? It's something new and different. Nobody's done it. Can you make it work? The 500 will get you that, and then we would come back at the budget session, Mr. Chairman, and say, now we need the money to expand the program. Well, what happened in the interval is the national reform passed. And if that holds and the timeline holds in it, we've got to make a decision in 2013 about how we're going to handle that mandatory Medicaid expansion that's there. And if you want to look at this, as I think we should, as an alternative to a very expensive decision that we otherwise going to have to make then, you need to have the hard data with the larger group at that time, available to you in 2013. If you think that deadline is going to slip, if you're confident that we're going to get the national reform repealed, then you can say we can go on the schedule of doing things a little more methodically, try it with 500, and then expand it. What this amendment does is say, let's go ahead and do the expansion on September 1st before we come back again. I trust the governor. Governor has to authorize it. Trust the governor to be able to say, look, you've got it proved with the lower number that it'll work. Now's the time to get the statistically significant population. And, Mr. Chairman, as I was developing this bill, I wrote 3 different organizations that had access to saying, you experts, tell me how many you need to be statistically significant, because the 3,000 was developed as a combination of the judgment of an insurance executive or two and my judgment, and was developed as much on how many do we think we can reasonably get as to how many do we really need to be statistically significant. And the statistical significance is pretty complicated, because you're spending more on everybody, and most of your savings comes out of a small group, probably 5% of your population. So you've got some random factors in how much you save in that 5%, and you need to overcome those with a larger sample. The answer I got back surprised me. It ranged from 2,000 to 2,500, not 3,000, a smaller number. And the people that seemed to have done the most thorough job on it were the ones that recommended 2,000. So that's what this amendment does. It's the cost to expand it up to 2,000. So let me see if I can correctly frame the choice that's before you. We adopt this amendment. We're going to authorize the program to go to 2,000 people from 500 on September 1st. That will give us enough time to have a good year's experience before we have to start working up our response to the situation in 2013, before we have to make a decision in 2013 general session on how we're going to handle the Medicaid expansion. You want to have the data in hand then, if you want to be able to have the data in hand to do what's called an 1115 waiver in the Medicaid program, taking part or all of our Medicaid program, or Medicaid expansion as the case may be, to the Healthy Frontiers model, then you need this amendment. If you think, now, that deadline's going to slip, we're going to have some time in there, the federal teaser rate may last, the thing may get repealed, then we can afford to go with the just go to 500 as the committee number two amendment proposes. So that's the choice before you. It's, you need to do one of the two things, because if you do nothing, then the program comes to an end on June 30th and you don't learn anything. You need to do one of the two things. This gives you a choice. You vote aye, you go for the speed that gets you to 2013 with data. You vote no, you come next year and we talk about expansion because we've proved it'll work with 500, but it won't get you the data in time for 2013. That's the choice before you. I thought I was going to be here advocating for, when we passed it last year, I thought I was going to be here advocating for the funding for 500 this time. The National Forum made me say, whoops, we may well have a need for the data quicker, but that's your choice. There's good arguments on both sides. I would urge you to go for the faster one, but that's a matter for your collective judgment, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment. In appropriations, we were passed out a little synopsis here about some of the current costs, and this was by the good senator from Natrona County on December 16, 2010. And I'll just going to go over some of the costs so you can understand that maybe the option of doing nothing and doing nothing on this amendment may indeed be the appropriate option. The cost for non-disabled Wyoming Medicaid is currently $4,632. Now, you divide that by two because the federal government picks up for half of it and we get the other half. So you can write this down, $2,316. That's the cost. If we, in 2013, have to go out because of the federal government tells us we have to have these people on Medicaid, it's going to cost us $2,316 if they're out there on today's price, on today's rate. Now, private insurance, that's a little bit higher as far as the state's costs. If we were just going to go out and buy all of our insurance on the private market, that would cost the state $3,068. So we got option A here is the total cost of $4,600, state cost of $2,300. Option B, the state pays private insurance an entirely cost of a little over $3,000. Or we can go with what we're doing on this pilot project, a research project. That's option C, and that'll cost the state $4,559. So, you know, look at it. Do we need the data for 2,500 people to make a decision? You know, frankly, I don't believe so. I made this decision already. I've got enough data. We don't need it. The program's not going to work. It's going to be too expensive. But the Appropriations Committee made the decision, well, let's stay with our research department at 500 and see whether or not they can actually prove it out in another year. Frankly, I don't believe we need to go to 2,500. I mean, ask yourself the question, do you want to pay $2,316 or $4,559? And what's the better deal for the state of Wyoming?
Additional discussion. We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 139. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, my colleague on the committee expressed probably the basis for a certain amount of skepticism that I have that the plan works, will work. Having said that, doing nothing is not a great option either. I mean, you're sitting there and you know your company needs to grow, and we don't like, we see that our sales are flat, and we all sit around and say we won't do any research and development, and then the company goes out of business because we never wanted to try anything. If somebody has a better plan, speak up, because we'd sure need them. And we have a group out there that are trying hard, and I want to put some other numbers into perspective for you. If you were to pull out your set of file 1 and look at page 25, you'll see our healthcare financing budget. On page 25, we are on the amendment, and on page 25, we're spending our general fund now $481 million of general fund, and you add that to the our federal funds, we're spending $1.2 billion per every 2 years on Medicaid clients. And as pointed out, that's roughly about $4,632 per Medicaid client. Now, you can't do a reform project with those same population because they have Medicaid coverage. So to find a population of people that would have an incentive to come into the plan, you're going to people that are generally uninsured, but not in Medicaid. So you're picking up this group of people. What the sponsor is saying is that's the same group of people that are going to be targeted by the new health care reform in the event that it becomes law or stays law or whatever your view of it is. And that is a group that is presently uninsured. That's a group that's presently right now built into your premiums, because in large part they still go to the hospital, they still get care, and then that cost shifting goes over and hits your company, and you're wondering why we're paying your premiums are high is because this group it's not as though they're not getting those services, but they're getting uncompensated, and they're getting very expensive services because they're not getting services in advance. Rather, they're not getting preventive care. They're just going to the emergency room when they have extraordinarily high expenses. They're not paid. Your hospitals can't pay them. They don't pay. The hospitals kick that to your premium, and you pay it. Cost shifting. So having said I want you to understand that we understand these things on Appropriations Committee, and we understand that there is a cost to doing these plans, so that if you are going to simply do a benefit analysis as to whether or not if we bought insurance for this group of people, would we be better off just to buy insurance? Absolutely. You will not get the cost benefit because we could buy insurance for them and it would be less than the cost of the premium or the cost of this plan. But But that's not the objective. The objective is can we get a long-term group going where people begin to manage their care and reduce the cost, the overall cost? That's the R&D project. So the purpose for talking about the $1.2 billion of Medicaid for a group that's not even here and talking about the cost benefit on a unit basis on a per person is to explain what is at stake and what it is that our long-term goal gets. Is this the right way to do it? I don't know. Am I skeptical? You bet I am. But do I want to have my R&D department work on a project? Yes. Would I support the increase if I was the board of directors? No. Let's see how we're going to do on the 500, but that's the question you're being asked.
Further discussion. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Folks, a couple things. I hope we don't lose sight of the rabbit here. Just to comment on, and boy, they've thrown a lot of numbers around, and I'm never sure whether we're talking dollars or Chinese yangs or just what we're talking, but either way, they're pretty grim. But understand what we're trying to do, at least in part, with this program. If the Affordable Care Act stays on the books or mandated either insurance or insurance exchanges, somewhere down the line, somebody is going to have to define what that policy will look like for those people who are currently in the uninsured bracket, the ones up to the 138%, there's a category in that population from 138% of poverty on down to the indigent, if you will, that are high-expense, high-risk people. But you still got to insure them. One way or the other, we are going to insure them. But what we're asking for is two things. One, can we prove there is significant savings over time by encouraging those people to live healthy? Are these the right incentives to make them live healthy? You know, things like telling them, quit smoking these things. It might be good for you not to do that quite as much. Just, you know, when you got a six-pack and really limited. It's trying to change their behavior, and that's what we're trying to do. But down the road, what we're also doing is trying to define, if we are mandated to go into an exchange, what that policy will look like for the people at 138% of poverty or whatever. And we better feel pretty confident about it, because there's a little kicker in that act. And it's called the maintenance of effort. And once you enter into that exchange, you can't back out against it. We've got the wrong group. They're smokers. We're going to kill all of them. I don't know what we do with them. You can't do that. You got to go with that maintenance forever, and that's mandated. That's the law now. Even if we get it repealed, we're not going to lose that criteria, and yet we're going to have to take care of those people. If you really want to know whether it's going to be successful, my suggestion is you need as broad a sample as possible. It still isn't a very broad sample, if you really think about it. Particularly when you look at the group we're trying to test this on, they're not all healthy livers, literally. No pun intended, Mr. Chairman. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to sit down and shut up.
Further discussion on the amendment.
I'm for it.
Okay. Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I didn't want to follow that line, actually, because it was a good closing mark, but I did want to make one more point. When we're talking about statistical significance and we're talking about the data that we need to make a decision, there are usually several levels in experiments where you start off with a small trial bit of data to determine some of the first initial data points to perhaps look at the feasibility of a project. I think we're at the feasibility stage at this point, Mr. Chairman. And what we're trying to measure right now is whether we can even get people to spend that money in a healthy manner. I don't think we need to look at the long-term future and the entire actuarial tables for this group and have a statistically significant group to determine whether or not they're going to live longer as a result of it. I think what we need to look at with this 500-person group is whether they'll actually go get their annual checkup. Simple things like that. Because if we can't show that by giving a group of 500 people we can this much money, we can get them to go to the doctors, well, there's probably not a lot of point in doing it with 2,500 more people. So I think this is the feasibility study. If this is successful and we see that we can actually get them to do the things that start leading down the road towards good health, then we might want to expand the pool and take it up to a larger scale pilot. I mean, that's just good experimental method where you're testing a series of hypotheses instead of just saying, all right, we're going to have one massive experiment, we're going to blow the bank on it, we hope it works. So it's a good diligent method, and I would urge a no vote on this amendment so that we can take it one step at a time and make sure that we're doing our due diligence, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? Yes. Senator Scott.
Chairman, and that's the kind of research design that, you know, it's hard to argue with. The question here is, the problem here is that we're going to have to, we need data to make a decision in 2013. That's not a date that we set. That's a date that's been set for us. And if you pass the amendment, what will happen is to go from the 500, the feasibility test group, which is, I think, appropriate size for that, to the, in this case, 2,000, you're going to have to rely on the governor to make a decision that, yes, we've proved it out with the test group, and now, and the bill we passed last year is clearly structured, you've got to get the governor's approval to do that. If we do that, then we can have the data in 2013. If we say, no, we'll stick with the 500 for another year, we'll be the group making the decision on the expansion next year. And so it's a matter of how badly do you think we need the data in 2013?
Any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt this Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 139, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. That amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, just want to say one more thing on the bill to make it absolutely clear. The funding and the law as it stands right now runs out June 30 of 2011, this year. We don't pass this bill, you have terminated the project. So I just want to make that crystal clear. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any other questions that may come up.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 139, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 139 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for our consideration is Senate File 133. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 133, Medicaid Diversion Program, an act relating to Medicaid programs, sponsored by Senator Scott. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Martin, Schiffer, Scott, and Dockstader. No, Senate. Let me start that over. Aye, Senator Martin, Schiffer, and Scott. No, Senator Dockstader and Nutting. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 133 do pass with no standing committee amendments, and I'll explain the Senate file. Mr. Chairman, this is, it's entitled Medicaid Diversion Program, and it's very much related to the bill that we just passed. What this does is it authorizes the Medicaid diversion project, where they can divert recipients to the from Medicaid to the Healthy Frontiers program we just discussed. It's Department of Health that can do it. It is entirely discretionary with the director of the Department of Health, and it has no appropriation. And the practical implication of that is he better do it only when he can save money in the Medicaid program. Now, there is an authorization here, and you'll find the authorization on page top of page 4, where he can accept federal funds. And there are some demonstration grants that are available that are competitive grants you might or might not be able to get. And you might be able to get some federal funding to do some experimenting. And so that's a possibility here. The other possibility is that he may, the director of the health department, may be able to identify a population within Medicaid that would be cheaper with Healthy Frontiers and that he has confidence in. The criteria are on page 2, and the first one is that the person diverted has to voluntarily consent. And then they have to be in Medicaid or be a qualified applicant to Medicaid. The person diverted has to comply with the work requirements of Healthy Frontiers within 120 days. Now, implication of that is if they're working those 20 hours a week, they're almost certainly going to lose their Medicaid eligibility. This is Medicaid eligibility is one of the things that keeps people out of the workforce. So with those criteria, you've got some real limitations on this program, and there's some more limitations on page 3, starting at line 7. It can't go to over 500 by January 1st of next year, 1,000 prior to April 1st, 2012, et cetera. Mr. Chairman, I have no idea whether this will enroll anybody or nobody. It's a tool for the new director of the Department of Health. It's attempting to give him a tool where he can start to have an option that may control some of the costs in our Medicaid program, and the Medicaid program is out of hand, as we all know. And we're going to be discussing next week when we discuss the budget. Mr. Chairman, that's the long and the short of it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to focus, if I may, with the sponsor over on page 4, lines 6 through 12. And the appears to be an authorization to use state expenses from the Medicaid line. If the Medicaid first question is, can you take our general fund to help fund these persons? How much? What's the cap? And if, for example, the person that just identified was a person that was on the Medicaid program and he became Medicaid ineligible, then that was a dollar that our Medicaid would no longer be responsible for. He would go off the Medicaid plan. And are you saying, well, we're going to pretend that he was still Medicaid eligible and the state share of that fund would now be available to increase the size of your plan? I guess we need to know that, because that, in essence, is an appropriation now for the care of somebody that was not Medicaid eligible. So that's sort of a round end of increasing the size of your plan. And if the then I guess the next question is that if suppose that's what you're doing, how are you going to calculate what general fund amounts are available for this recipient?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and let me just share the vision I had on this. The health department would identify an individual who was otherwise going to stay in the Medicaid program because of some of their medical needs. Say, look, we put them in Healthy Frontiers. We'll reduce our Medicaid cost enough so that we'd be able to pay the state share in Healthy Frontiers. If you can't do that, you don't have the appropriation. You've got to live within your existing appropriation there. It's an attempt to save cost in the Medicaid program, and if you can't actually save cost, you better not do it. Now, math changes if you got a federal grant to pick up the cost. But that's, in my thinking, that's the calculation. It almost has to be a continuous calculation. If you quit paying them in Healthy Frontiers, they come back to you in Medicaid in a hurry if there's a problem. And it costs you the general fund dollars that a Medicaid client costs you. Now, we know from some of the work that the HCMS group did that an adult in Medicaid costs almost 1.5 times what an adult in private insurance costs. Healthy Frontier is a good deal closer to private insurance. We think it's going to be cheaper. So there is some room there, but clearly a good most of your Medicaid population isn't going to meet the cost test. So that's your limitation. And it's a tool to try to reduce the Medicaid budget. And, Mr. Chairman, it may or may not be premature, but it's the kind of thing we have to look at if we're going to get Medicaid costs under control.
Any additional discussion on the bill? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps a bit of an explanation on a no vote on committee there. Some concerns there, Mr. Chairman, that see the point that we were trying to do, save some costs and so forth, Mr. Chairman, but also we do that under wording that says continuously appropriating, diverting people into a program that we're continuously appropriating. I had some concerns, though, so an explanation of my no vote. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm still not understanding because I'm reading the words and I'm not seeing the limitations. First of all, if as in the original explanation, we're offering to use our Medicaid expenditure line to pay for recipients who have moved off of Medicaid, by definition, there could be no savings because they've moved off Medicaid. They wouldn't have it. Concern number one. Concern number two is I don't see a limitation. If the notion is that you would take a person who is otherwise available for Medicaid, and if that person elects to go on this plan, then we will offer up the equivalent of what our average Medicaid expenditure is for that person for a year. So you take all your Medicaid dollars and you conclude that our average cost is $4,280 per year for each recipient, and that is the money that's now available for the towards the premiums. And incidentally, since we only pay half of that, our state fund is only $2,000 per person, and that's all we'll offer up. If that is the concept, so that we're essentially saying our average cost per person is $2,000, and that's the cap. Well, that would be okay if we knew that was the cap. But it may be that this is a recipient that is not healthy and isn't going to hit that $4,000. He might be the person that's hitting at $200,000 a year, and the minute you move him into the healthy frontiers and give him a health savings account, now you've blown the top off the our reinsurance amount, because he's not, and with that $100,000 would have cost us in the Medicaid program $50,000, because Medicaid paid half, we paid half. Now we've moved him to a program that Medicaid's not contributing any dollars to, or may or may not be, and that we just took a $50,000 expenditure and we made it a $100,000 state expenditure. Maybe I understand it wrong, but that's the only way I could see that it would work. And I don't know what our cap is as the language is reflected. We are risk managers, and what we need to do is figure out what is the risk. But if the risk is we take a person that is a $50,000 obligation and make it a $100,000 obligation, that's not a very good plan.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion, and when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so, the favorable recommendation on Senate File 133, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The bill has failed a voice vote. Please, those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to Senate Rules 11-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard? Bebout? Burns?
No.
Case? Christensen? Coe?
No.
Cooper? Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Yes.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon? Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting? Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Excused.
Closing vote? Cooper, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 10 ayes, 18 noes.
Senate File 133, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I haven't hit your turned your microphone on.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again. And then
you've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole is in recess.
It's not a cleared desk, is it? It is. Mr. Majority, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, you got it.
He was standing. Mr. Majority, formally, that clears the desk. Are there any announcements?
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1 p.m.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee, number 9, Minerals, will meet just as soon as possible. If members of the committee want to grab a quick bite to eat up in room S18 to consider House Bill 110, Engrossed Successor Corporation Asbestos-Related Liability Act 2, House Bill 112, Engrossed Mining Permits, House Bill 108, Engrossed Collection Agencies, and Mr. Vice President, if we don't finish any of those bills, we will get back up there right after we adjourn.
Other messages. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Vice President, your Transportation Committee number 8 will meet Monday, February 7th, 10 minutes after adjournment in room S14 to take up House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, and House Bill 177, Engrossed Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day.
Other messages? If not, the President's gone, there will be a party. If not, you've heard the motion. The Senate shall stand in recess until 2 p.m. 1 p.m. 1 p.m. I wasn't listening.